The companions waited until dark. No one came for them. Outside, they could hear the wag being prepared. Ryan hoped that with the amount of work that was being expended on the preparation for the raid, no one would want to go to the barn. It seemed his luck would hold. The companions prepared by cleaning their weapons and checking their diminishing stocks of ammo. Without JB, supplies were running low. Hours dragged until finally Buckley and his two-man guard came to fetch them.
Y'all ready to get rolling?
More than ready.
Let's move it!
Outside, the wag was waiting, with a crew of five standing by. Two of them were recognizable as the woman Mags and the man she had fought a few nights before. The other three were indeterminate. A thin man, a fat man, and a fat woman. They could have been any of the Vill dwellers.
Are you coming with us, Buckley?
Hell yeah! Me and the boys wouldn't miss this one for anything. Right, boys?
The two guards nodded eagerly. At a gesture from Buckley, three Vill dwellers moved forward and came between the companions, separating Doc and Christy from the others.
Now then, I'm thinking that y'all can make yourselves useful around here while we're gone. Make way for all the good things we'll be bringing back for y'all.
In other words, you wish us to mop out storehouses and clean ordure from the surrounding area.
Hell yeah! Whatever the fuck you just said. Rest of y'all, climb on board! Come on, Ryan boy! Fire her up!
You mean you don't know how to drive one of these?
Well, hell no! That's one of the reasons we needed y'all.
The Vill war party climbed into the wag, followed by Ryan, Mildred, and Jack. As the door of the wag closed on those in the front, Ryan was aware of the stench emanating from the Nagasaki fighters. It was going to be a long, hard ride. Ryan steered the vehicle on the track that led out of Nagasaki.
What's the plan, then? Do we wait for the convoy, or do we track them for some distance? And how the fuck do you propose that we tag on the end without them spotting us?
Oh, shit. Like I know. We just see what happens, yeah?
As darkness began to fall, Mildred, Jack, and Ryan wondered if they could get out of this debacle in one piece and get back to Doc and Christy. Ryan's reverie was broken as the old blacktop came into view, running across the expanse of wasteland ahead of them.
Slow down here, Ryan boy. There they are.
Ryan's eye followed the line of Buckley's pointing finger. Coming toward them, likely to cross their path in 10 minutes, was the convoy. There were five wags and seven outriders on bikes. Ryan drove off the blacktop. Soon the convoy passed. Although it was dark, the land was flat and without any camouflaging features, and Ryan was sure that the stationary wag stood out against the flat horizon. Nonetheless, the convoy proceeded without any indication that it had noticed the wag, waiting to move smoothly into position, at the rear of the procession. Ryan slid the wag into gear, drove it onto the blacktop, and slipped in at the rear of the convoy, marveling at the apparent stupidity of the traitor in charge.
Oh, yeah!
At the front of the convoy, the traitor Malloy rode next to his driver. He had stared at the wag standing on the shoulder of the road with barely concealed amusement as they passed, then followed its progress in his side mirror as his wag drew farther away. The darkness, broken only by the headlights of the wags and bikes behind, prevented him from seeing the point at which the rogue wag slipped into place. However, a series of signals from the headlights of the vehicles behind told him that it had taken up position. Malloy shook his head in amazement and looked at the road ahead. The lights of Duma visible, standing out like a beacon in the wastes.
Crazy fuckers. Let Xander deal with them.
The biker sent ahead by Malloy had told his story three times before eventually getting to relay it to Sec Chief Hammock. Grant was in the med lab when Hammock walked in.
Don't see you round here this way often.
Yeah, we've got a weird one, and I wanted to run it by you first.
Grant had trained him when he first joined the Sec Guard, and although Grant had long since been seconded to Med, Hammock still thought of him as the more experienced of the two. Besides which, Grant was close to Xander, and Hammock didn't relish the idea of going to the Baron with something as plain strange as this.
We got a mess of muties trying to sneak into Duma as part of a convoy. Heard tell they've got a Cyclops with them.
Well, I always thought them inbreds would keep themselves to themselves. All these years, they've been no bother. But I guess the insanity in their tiny gene pool has finally got to them.
Yeah, but it's not them that I'm really worried about. It's who they've got with them.
What? A bunch of captives who have to fight or be chilled? What's to worry about?
Weren't you listening? A one-eyed man? When we've got...
Xander doesn't have to know every detail. Do we know this man?
Who?
The biker with the story. Is he known to us?
Oh, yeah, he's one of Malloy's.
Good. Then we have something we can use to persuade him that there are a few, shall we say, unimportant points to this story. Wouldn't you agree? After all, we can't have Xander sidetracked by a legend and soft peddling at the expense of our reputation for coming down hard.
You're right. Come and talk to this rider for me, Grant.
It'll be a pleasure.
And so, when the outrider from Malloy's convoy got to retell his story for the fourth time, standing in front of an amused Xander, there were certain elements that he omitted. Xander waved him away when he had finished, and Hammock handed him over to a set guard on the door.
Sir, I think we should allow them in as far as the wag station, and then surround them.
Why let them get that far? Our first post could knock them out, with no danger to surrounding buildings. Think how much jack they would take to rebuild.
I understand your point, Baron. But with the wider expanse of land in which to make good an escape, and with only the outer post force against them, they could elude total destruction. Now how would that seem to traitor Malloy? One sure weakness, and word will spread. It could be the first crack in what has otherwise been an impeccable reputation.
But what if these outlanders they have with them increase their efficiency and firepower? How would that look?
Grant gave Hammock the briefest of glances before continuing.
You heard the messenger, Baron. These outlanders are probably wounded, tired, and being forced against their will. I can't see that they would be much of a threat, can you? This way we draw them into a safe, enclosed space and then wipe them out in front of Malloy and his crew. Thus we negate the threat from the inbreds, and also hammer home a message to any who would seek to come against us.
Hammock looked from one to the other, while Xander pondered that. Making the biker leave out any reference to a one-eyed man made it that much easier for Grant to persuade Xander that his tactical plan was the best. But as sec chief, Hammock would feel the Baron's wrath if things went wrong. He hoped to hell that Grant was making the right call.
All right, let's do it your way. Alert the sec force and get the armory onto this.
JB and Ollie had finished priming the blaster section of the armory when the call came.
Yo, JB, dude. There's something big going down. This is where we get to see some action. Come on.
JB raised an inquisitory eyebrow at Ollie.
Xander likes us to re-equip the sec depending on what the task is. He also likes us to be on hand when there's a firefight. Kind of like we should be there in case something fucks up with the ordnance. Any armor worth his jack should be able to hold his own in a firefight.
JB knew what was unspoken. If he really was the JB Dix that Xander spoke of, then he should be a good fighter. The weird thing was, JB really didn't know what he was like in combat. But he guessed he was about to find out. The two men hurried down the corridor to the lobby of the armory building.
Are all three of us going?
No, not Dad. Xander thinks he's too old now. Maybe he's right. Dad makes a lot of noise about it, but I figure he's slowing up a bit.
Maybe that's why he's not happy about me coming in. Listen, he knows this armory better than any man. No matter what Xander says, you or me couldn't do the job without his advice.
Maybe you should tell him that.
If he gives me a chance to say more than two words, I will.
The lobby was already filling up with uniformed sec men. A force of about 20 was being deployed in the action. Ollie saw Esquivel working his way through the crew.
What's happening, Es?
Some weird shit as far as I can make out. Something and nothing. Xander's turning it into a show of strength. Guess that thing with seams rattled him.
Any baron who gets screwed over has to clamp down hard. Show anyone else with ideas that they're on a one-way ticket to the farm the first opportunity they get.
Heads up, guys. It's my boss, Hammock.
Over the next 10 minutes, Sec Chief Hammock proceeded to outline what the outrider sent in by Malloy had told him, and what Grant and Xander had decided as a course of action. Except that he sold the course of action as his own, and said nothing about a one-eyed man in the opposition wag. The notion that they would let the convoy into the Ville with the rogue wagon tow caused a ripple of bemusement. But when Hammack told them it was a chance to make a show of authority to let the traitors know who they could rely upon, Ollie looked across at JB with a slow nod. The lad was learning some important lessons, ones that would mean a lot if he did eventually become Armorer of Duma. JB's attention strayed for a second as he realized that thinking in such terms meant that he had the notion to move on, though how he could escape from Duma was something he'd have to consider when there was time.
Ollie, JB, I want the sec men equipped with SMGs and Grens, as well as several of the M16-M203 combos.
The Gren launcher section of the combo needed handling with care, and from what Ollie had told him, they were rarely used. There could be some interesting, not to mention dangerous, fireworks if the heavy-duty weapons were put in the hands of sec men who had little or no training in how to use them. There was nothing for it but to hope that the men had been trained. As Hammack outlined the plan of attack, it became clear that once they had cornered the WAG and isolated it from the rest of the convoy, JB and Ollie would be almost in the front line, providing ordnance support and fighting.
All right, men. The convoy is 30 minutes away. You have your orders. Dismissed.
Making sure that the SMGs and the M16-M203s went out with full checks and good supplies of ammo kept JB busy, while Ollie dealt with the distribution of Grens both for hand use and also for use with the combo. It wasn't until they were on their way to the WAG park being used for ambush that JB had a chance to question Ollie and Esquivel about the rogue WAG.
No one knows that much about this bunch of inbreeds, just that they've been out here since the nuke cost and they never really bothered us before. They like to keep themselves to themselves,
if you know what I'm saying.
Nasty fuckers, though. You hang out with the trade crews, you get to hear shit. They've been scavenging for years, maybe trying to snatch the odd WAG here and there. Sometimes they succeed. No one ever sees those crews again. I don't even want to think about it.
So why are they still there?
You mean, are they a threat to Xander if they do that? No. They're only a threat to the traitors. And even then, only if the traitors' own segment are shit. If they don't come near us, we don't waste time and Jack on running them down. But now they are coming near.
The thing is, why are they doing this now? When they had all that time and they never tried anything like it?
That, my friend, is a very good question. One that Xander would do well to ask of Hammack. Somehow, I don't think he has.
So we'd better watch ourselves, Ollie. They don't sound like they'd get this brave unless they had some new trick up their sleeve.
It became difficult to continue the conversation as they arrived at the WAG park and took up positions. Any words overheard that criticized the Baron could cause them problems. The time for addressing these issues would be later. Now, they could only wait for the convoy to arrive. The convoy swept unopposed through the roadblocks leading into Duma.
Shit! If I'd have thought they were this stupid, we'd have had ourselves a little raid like this years ago!
In front, eyes glued to the WAGs ahead, Ryan was having the opposite reaction. This was too easy. The convoy had swept through without any routine checks. This couldn't be right.
Keep it frosty. We don't want to get caught off guard.
Oh, the hell we will. We're home free, Ryan boy. All we have to do is come out blasting.
The convoy had swept along the blacktop, past the sec checkpoints, and was now approaching a designated area, marked out by wire fencing and strong lights. There was one on each side of the road, which bisected the Ville. The one on the right was full of WAGs. The one on the left was virtually empty, and those few WAGs that were parked in there were around the edges. Ryan felt a familiar tightening in the pit of his stomach. Something was definitely wrong. He glanced over his shoulder at Jack and Mildred. They couldn't see the WAG park from the rear, but both of them looked tense. It was a setup. They were being drawn into a trap. It was up to the companions to not only get themselves out of it, but also the Nagasaki dwellers. Otherwise, there would be little chance of recovering Christy and Doc. The convoy rolled into the WAG park, the vehicles peeling off to take up attack positions, and stopped, encircling Ryan's WAG.
What the fuck?
Shut up and listen. They're on to us. If we're gonna get out in one piece, you listen to me and do what I say, okay?
Boss Buckley was lost, fear creeping over his face as he looked out of the windshield. The other Nagasaki dwellers had picked up on his uncertainty and were lost in their own silent fears.
Mildred, Jack, They know we're here. They've got us surrounded. We're gonna have to blast our way out.
The SEC forces had taken a position around the perimeter of the WAG park, using strategically placed WAGs for cover. Keeping silent, they had waited for Malloy's convoy to enter the park and circle before peeling off to take up its own defensive positions, leaving the rogue WAG isolated. Ollie was waiting with JB and Esquivel, watching from behind a WAG. Ollie looked pretty nervous.
Easy. Wait until they make the first move.
Why don't we hit them straight away? We got the firepower.
Yeah, and we don't know how well protected that WAG is. Better for them to give us the initiative by exposing themselves.
What worries me is that they might be thinking the same way.
They don't sound like they've got the smarts.
That depends who the hell they've got with them, doesn't he?
They've got us surrounded. The way I see it, we've got two options. One, we try to reverse the WAG and hit the bastard road before they have a chance to open fire, and hope the move shocks them enough to slow them up in responding. Or two, me, Jack, and Mildred go out and lay down suppressing fire for your people to go and take one of their WAGs before we all hightail it out of here. Hey, are you listening to me, Buckley?
Ryan took the chief by the shoulder. Buckley looked at him, fear written in his face. The Nagasaki people, Buckley in particular, talked a good fight, but obviously only when they had superior numbers and a territorial advantage. Looking around, Ryan could see that virtually all the others in the WAG were also terrified. The only exception was the woman Mags. It seemed as though nothing could scare her. Her fat, flat face was expressionless, but she nodded as his eye caught hers.
I'm with you. I want to get out in one piece.
Looks like we're on our own here.
Hammock gazed across the line of WAGs until his eyes came back to the WAG where Ollie, JB, and Esquivel were waiting. The tension stretched his nerves. He wanted the rogue WAG to make the first move. The rogue WAG's door suddenly sprung open, and four figures emerged, firing as they dropped to the ground. Malloy's men went wild, seeing their own taken out, and fired wildly at the rogue WAG. The convoy fighters were now in the way of Hammock's own men.
Blow that motherfucking WAG off the face of the earth!
Rising above the tops of the WAGs, the SEC men carrying M16-M203 combos fired. The grenades landed wide, the explosions shattering the air, clots of mud and earth thrown up in a cloud that mixed with the smoke to form an obstructive blanket over the area. Across the circle, JB stared in disbelief.
Dark night, what the fuck is Hammock doing? How the hell are we supposed to see what's going on?
Attack! Move forward!
This is a bastard mess, dude.
JB racked the M4000 to hit the center of the park with a load of barbed metal flechettes.
Watch your backs! Keep calm and look out for any of those stoops firing wild!
Under the cloud of smoke that covered them, Ryan sought out Jack and Mildred. The Gren explosions had thrown them away from the cover of the WAG, and now both were firing into the melee, hidden by the smoke and dust, hoping that they wouldn't get hit.
Get back in the WAG! You're gonna have to hit the gas and hope...
Suddenly, the muties poured out of the WAG, firing wildly. The explosions had galvanized the Nagasaki dwellers into action. Two of them were immediately hit, falling to the ground.
Yeah! Y'all know how to have some fun, Ryan, boy! Let's grab us a WAG and get the hell out with some jack!
You're two men down, they're using grenades, and we don't have that kind of firepower. We need to use all we've got to get out.
Well, shit! Just when we start having some fun!
Ryan turned to locate his people again. He gestured to Mildred and Jack to get back to the WAG, and tried to round up the Nagasaki raiders while providing covering fire with a Sig Sauer. Fortunately, the cover from the Gren smoke and debris was enough to make the SEC force fire wild. Mags had dragged one of the Nagasaki crew back to the WAG, and Ryan ran over to help her pull back the other. Both were still alive.
Fire blast! We need to get out of here!
JB had been unable to use the M4000. There was too much confusion, too much chance of those counted as being on his side getting injured. He flung the shotgun over his shoulder and unslung the Uzi.
We can't even use this without risking our own! Hammock's really fucked this! Xander's not gonna be happy!
But JB didn't hear him. He was frozen as he caught sight of a figure by the enemy WAG, then another. A slight albino teen in a camo jacket, moving low and fast, almost obscured by the smoke and dust. And a black woman whose shape seemed so familiar, JB could almost taste memory coming back. and there was a third figure he recognized.
Looks like that's the smart one. And I got him.
Ollie lifted his Weatherby, drawing a bead on Ryan as he moved. A tall, muscular man with curly black hair. JB spotted the eye patch, the scar puckering down the man's cheek, visible even from that distance.
Ollie, no!
JB thrust a hand out and knocked the weapon aside as Ollie squeezed the trigger. The shot went wide. The young man looked at JB, astounded. JB suddenly felt as though the ground was slipping from under him, and he lost consciousness.